Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun
Radio. Live from Cap. Here's Tom.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson, the podcast. I'm Tom Wilson, the host of this wild extravaganza, and it's a miracle. The miracle is me taking this machine, plugging it in, and making sure it's operational, and opening a new file to do this recording, and to press record, and to talk into it, which is four things in a row, which involve some kind of technical aspect. So in that case, yes, it is a miracle. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we cuddle up close into our sleighs and we share our warmth and love and open our hearts to one another and share some jewels of wisdom from a life well spent. As a lot of society seems to slide into the morass of the new paradigm. Who do I have to hate for you to like me? But enough about the rest of society. We are our own little culture, aren't we? Don't we go around and everything is niche markets, and we all go and we look for those things that resonate with us. And I just wanted to thank you for the people who are emailing me and writing postcards to P.O. Box 18106, Encino, California, 91416, and just saying that it resonates with you. Because honestly, when I began this, folks, I honestly thought I would do about 8 of these and I would run out of the ability to speak and people would be people would be emailing me just with, you know, one word emails like, why? Or from Central America, por qué? But here we are. Here we are settling down. And I hope you're having a good day. And I hope that after this Big Pop Fun episode, your day gets remarkably better. Not for having listened to it. I mean, I just hope you just get lucky. I hope that just something happens that's good. Good. You have a good lunch. You have a nice salad. You have a good fake salad. You have a good salad like I have. One of those salads. When you go to a restaurant, we have a nice salad today. We're featuring our prosciutto and Havarti salad. And you're like, don't you mean bacon and cheese? They had this. My guest today is Jim Hope. My guest on this podcast is Jim Hope. And Jim and I will go out, and Jim and I will have fake salads. We'll call it going out for fake salads because where do we go? CPK, California Pizza Kitchen. It's everywhere now, but it was certainly out here. They had – at least they called it bacon. They didn't call it prosciutto or ham or something or protein discs. They called it bacon and gorgonzola salad. Salad. Covered it. I mean, you almost couldn't see the green. Covered in bacon and gorgonzola cheese. It was a salad. But the thing was, you could have that. And then, as you know, you could leave saying, oh, that's good. Yeah, eat light. Yeah, just a little salad. Just a little salad. And we're on our way. Here is another conversation with Jim Hope. I'm not sure I like this one as much as the first one because, no, I think it's interesting. But I brought up 9/11. I brought up 9/11 2001, for which I can still, as many people can, let's face it, most of us can still get upset and angry, of course, because of the shock and the loss, the tragedy and the heartbreak, naturally. But additionally, because a large portion of my personal experience during 9/11, during the day, not in the early morning and in that evening, but during the day, most of my day was kind of, I found ridiculous and pathetic, and I can still get very, very, very angry about. So, yeah, I'm talking very angry. I'm trying not to get into it. So, hey, it's a podcast where I'm honest with you here at Big Pop Fun. But I don't want Big Pop Fun to be the useless, you know, pop gossip fest of Tom's book. Not, I don't mean Masked Man, my book, which I'll do a commercial for. No, I mean my book, the Irish book, you know, when you say you're in my book. That's what people would do years ago. You're in my book, meaning I'm opening my little book. I'm writing down your name, and then I'm putting an ink mark through it because you're finished. You're off my radar, or you're on my radar because, you know, it's going to happen. So I don't want it to be that. I don't want the podcast to be. And then I worked with this guy, and he was nice. And then I worked with this guy, and he was a jerk. And then I worked with this. You know, that's not my thing. But it came up with Jim, and my ears were getting hot, and the back of my head was going to blow off. So I hope it doesn't bleed too far into a nice conversation with my friend Jim. And look, let's do it. I know I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. It's not like I go off on Jim, but I was, our conversation was getting into this situation, and I was kind of gritting my teeth. I was about to throw a couple of inside fastballs. So we just moved on. But I hope that the bubbling steam doesn't affect my conversation with my very good friend, whom I love, Jim Hope.
Big Pop Fun.
Jim Hope just wouldn't shut up in the previous episode. It's not me. If you go back and you listen to the first episode with Jim Hope, you'll say, why does he keep talking?
There's so much
Tom
talking.
Is trying to bring the episode to a close.
I came
and
here
Jim
to
is
to
just
Tom,
blobbity
and then
blob.
This
yeah.
Jim guy,
what's happening
this is Tom's
with Tom?
Podcast, not
I'm
Jim's.
Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson. Last time I checked on the internet, wow. Jim Hope, I've never heard of him.
Right. That's the truth.
But
you've never heard of me.
No
Why
one
am
has
I talking?
Ever heard of you, Jim.
I know.
You
I have
are
a good
completely
name.
Unknown.
I have a good name.
Except while people are eating churros
yes.
On various sitcoms, name. Your name goes by.
My name goes by.
Co-executive it's producer,
actually,
Jim Hope.
My name is actually currently on three different shows that you might see on television. Yes.
And he
yes.
knows whatever.
Currently.
He knows supermodels from his later.
I've met one. A couple.
You met the whatever. You met John Stamos's ex-wife.
She was very nice, as I said.
I never really want a video podcast, but I do want this one to be video just for your face when you're just.
She's very nice.
Very nice. She's very, very nice.
Very pleasant. Her husband, her current husband, super nice.
Who, John really, Stamos?
Jerry O'Connell. Very, very nice.
Oh, okay. John Stamos, her first husband.
He was very nice. I met him like.
I don't know. I don't think I know Jerry O'Connell.
Jerry O'Connell, very good guy.
Do I meet? And then I meet him actually, and he goes, "What are you talking to me? We did that movie." And Jerry. Yeah, of course.
Really sweet guy. Very
Jerry.
Adore. Just a wonderful person. I really liked him very much. A lot of people.
Look, John Stamos is a nice guy. I like John.
Yeah, yeah. That's.
I like Bob Saget. I like Dave Coulier.
I don't know Dave Coulier. That's the one.
You don't?
Yeah, I never met him. Never worked with him. Because he's a comedy store guy. I started out with the improvs and stuff, and they never really kind of mixed at that time. So, and I came in later anyway.
You were later than that. We were old comedy dinosaurs. Yeah. Was he famous by that time?
I think pretty close to when I first started. Yeah, he was already kind of a big
guy. Wow. And you and I worked together on Titus, which we won't talk about much. But yeah. You and I were on the set of Titus.
Yes, the day right
on 9/11. On
9/11.
On 9/11. Because you, as a producer of Titus, made sure everyone showed up to work that day.
I didn't make sure of that. That wasn't my decision.
Was it not your decision?
No, I didn't make that decision. But, I mean, you know, I honestly, for me, I would have shown up. I didn't know anybody there, and I didn't really care that America was burning. No, I'm kidding. I thought it was horrible. I didn't really like being there. I thought that was a very – it was very – but
I think I'm still – honestly, and not
the
you.
The decision was made, I think, kind of in a defiant thing. I mean, Christopher Titus made the decision, and Christopher thought – I think in his mind it was like, well, we're not going to stop things because of those guys. A lot of people were
Yes,
grieving.
But Jim, he made it seem like
yeah.
those guys
yeah.
were everyone. He made it seem like – to me mm-hmm. that those guys were the, you know, the people mm-hmm. Dying in the World Trade Center and George W. Bush or whomever. Just yeah. the pow outside of us.
Oh, I think his premise was because of those terrorists, we're not going to stop this thing. We're not going to let them win. I think he might have been the first one to say we're not going to let the terrorists win. It really was his kind of thing. Like, no, we keep everything exactly the same. We do everything the way it was before because we're not going to act like this has destroyed us. And I don't think that was exactly wrong. I think the problem was there were a lot of people who were very sad at the time, and there were people who knew people who were afraid. And there were a lot of connections there, and it was just really – it was a tough time to be there, and a lot of people did not have their heads in the game for that. You know, it was just not – it was a hard thing to be involved
in. Yes, the continuation of the rehearsal right. of a right. situation comedy
right.
on that day was a thing at that time mm-hmm. that I disagreed with as strongly as I've ever disagreed with something in my life.
Yeah, I understand that. I completely understand that.
Because those guys stood there,
yeah.
and the executive producer, you know,
yeah.
feigned shock and horror as he said, listen, if anyone's really upset, as a group of people were watching a television program where poor people were forced to jump to their deaths, mm. He said, hey, if anyone's real upset, you know, you can go home right now.
Yeah.
And it's Hollywood, Jim. So did anyone move toward the exit?
You can't go on.
You can't. No.
There's no way.
Exactly.
Because then you don't have a job.
Exactly.
Yeah. yeah.
And don't come back.
Yeah.
If you leave this soundstage, believe me, we will get somebody and replace you.
I don't know that that was the implication, but it was that feeling probably. It's understandable because we are Hollywood people. And when the worst thing you can do as a boss in a Hollywood situation is – tell people, oh, you guys can go home early if you want. Because
if you want.
Say, if you want, you're saying you can't go home early.
Right.
Because I can't want to go home early. I have to want to be here. So it's like, it's not that people intend to say if you want. It's like a tag on a lot of the time. But we take it that way because we didn't get to those jobs because we're slackers. We didn't get to those jobs because we weren't going to put in 100% of effort. You can't put in 110%. It's statistically impossible. But you put in 100% of everything. That we sacrifice many of family, sacrifice time with family at the very least, sacrifice our mental energy. You know, I mean, many of the projects that we have in our own minds are put way on the back burner or completely eliminated because you really have to give the writing in Hollywood or producing in Hollywood or acting or any of that, you have to really give it like – a tremendous amount of effort. You know, it has to, it really, because there are a lot of people who want to do this. So when you say, go home if you want, you're never going to get people who go home. You have to say to them, you need to go home. I want you all to go home. Everyone go home. If you say that, they'll go home. But other than that, yeah, it doesn't. But I don't think it was an insidious, I don't think there was like a thing that way. I think there was a defiance in his mind that this is not how that's going to play, because that's his approach to life. Christopher's has been in opposition. He was in opposition to his father. He was in opposition to a system. He was in opposition to the clubs. He was in opposition to a lot of things so he deals in oppositions, and I don't know that he still does. He seems he's older and, you know,
I
but
yes.
There was an opposition, so I think he saw an enemy there, and he's not going to back down to his enemy. And I understand it's actually why he was so successful why the show got on the air, and it's why the show did well when it was on, and it's why his stand-up career is doing well still.
I disagree with you so strongly that I'm going to change subjects because I fear that I'm going to go on a long and angry diatribe that eventually I'm going to have to cut out of the podcast. Yeah. And I'm not good at editing
right.
So it's going to be – the people will hear where the cut is when I go, so, Jim, how are – so I'm going to stop talking now.
And I understand
now.
Your perspective too. I mean, I don't think – I don't know that you're wrong.
Other than my very, very vehement disagreement with you.
Yes, I know. On that. I don't know that you're wrong, but I'm not going to – you know, I don't know. Anyway, I love everybody. Let's move on.
You love everybody.
I try.
You love everybody. It was just, look, at the end of the day, can we admit that after the day,
after not been there.
After the end of the day, when all the work was done,
yeah.
when all the jokes were worked on,
yeah.
when everything happened,
yeah.
Some production assistant came in with lots of little candles for yeah. people to give probably
yeah.
the most pathetic and joyless rendition of God Bless America with lighted candles that I've ever heard in my life.
It was a very weird moment. It was a tough moment for everybody that day.
To me, by that point, that was a very rare kind of cynicism to me.
Yeah, I think it was. I honestly, you know, I'm ambivalent on the issue because I honestly believe that I understand that. I really get it, and I think there was also a great sincerity involved in it that was not necessarily. That was not at all cynical. So I think people are so complex. It's, you know, that as I've gotten older, I've just kind of looked and gone, you know, I don't really know what anybody's thing is. I think everybody changes their thing as they're in it. I don't know if anybody's logically consistent. I know that they're not. I know for a fact that people are not logically consistent. And so I know for a fact that there are people who operate on. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. There are truly evil people who are illogically consistent. There are people out there who will make arguments that are totally logically consistent and completely and wholly evil. But I think most people are fairly complex in the way that they approach life and don't really understand the ramifications of or the contradictions inherent in what they believe, and which is why we have tremendous problems in our political landscape.
We right? do not.
Yeah. Well,
again,
yeah.
I disagree. Politicians are fixing everything.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting because if you look at the divergence between the right and the left, for example, I'm very much become an Eisenhower centrist. Eisenhower's quote that I remind myself of is the middle of the road is the usable surface. The extremes, both right and left, are in the gutters. And that's where I look at it because if on the left, let's talk about the problem of the unsuccessful. We always have the problem of the unsuccessful. That is a huge issue in America. What do you do with people who are unsuccessful? Because it's supposed to be a society of successful people. We're all supposed to be able to succeed. The answer why are people unsuccessful? That's really that's the problem. Why are people unsuccessful? On the right, the answer seems to be because they don't work hard enough, because they're too lazy. Because they're slackers, because they're not applying themselves. On the left, the answer seems to be because they're exploited, because nobody loves them, because they're not getting any help, because they don't have opportunity, because they started out poor. Here's the interesting thing. They're both right and they're both wrong. There are plenty of lazy people who are poor, and they're poor because they're lazy. There's also plenty of people who are poor because they had no opportunity. I grew up impoverished. I grew up with nothing. We grew up in tenement houses, essentially. And when we moved up, it was into a mobile home. I mean, you know, that was our big move up, is to have a mobile home. So to us, that was like, you know, there are people who are in difficult circumstances and they are exploited. But there's plenty of people who are lazy in that circumstance too. On the flip side, and so you can't argue one or the other. It's complex. It's a complex. But we all want stupidity wants certainty. Simplicity. Simple people.
Well, also television, because yes. people are getting their arguments yes. from television. And
yes.
Television right. is black and white because that's interesting television.
Right. It's interesting. Yes,
a sophisticated argument isn't good TV because they're going,
exactly.
Yeah. Right.
I've actually babbled on way too long for a television conversation and probably too long for a podcast.
Way too long for a podcast. Way too long for this podcast.
Right. Exactly. You know, so I am talking about this thing, but, you know, it's like it doesn't work.
Has being very close with your wife Wanda's family
yes.
informed your cultural viewpoint or your political viewpoint? As your wife Wanda is African American.
Yeah, my wife is black. I know. I don't approve either.
But you are an interesting couple because simply Jim Hope is, you know, the guy from Orange County Yeah, but you are.
Yeah, but I am, but I'm not because here's the interesting thing.
But Jim Hope, you must have been, is, you know, almost a whiter quote unquote guy than Tom Wilson.
Almost, but I'm not. I grew up in the barrio. I grew up, and then my mom got a teaching job. She finally got a teaching credential at Cal State LA. And we moved out to the boonies, the rural area, which was all white. So my first time seeing that many white people, I was frightened. So I wasn't used to that at all. And then
well, so you're like me. You know, I grew up in Philadelphia, right, and everything, and everyone expects, oh, he just has – he has only eaten Wonder Bread in somewhere, right, in Nebraska.
Exactly.
Like, well, I was raised in the city. I'm from Philadelphia. Yeah. I have a very multicultural experience.
Completely different experience than most people expect from me. Yeah, so I grew up where, you know, it was dangerous. I mean, there were gangs. I mean, they had kids throwing cigarettes down my shirt, and I'd have to take it. I mean, little guys, you know, in gangs. I had a kid steal milk from me. I had two milks. My first day of junior high school, I'm walking along, and this guy, George, not Jorge, George, came and took my milk. And he had his essay boys with him, his vatos. And, you know, I was like, he's like, hey, Holmes, thanks for the milk. And he walks on. And I could have beaten him up right there. I was bigger. I was stronger. But I wanted to live because he had like six guys bigger and stronger than me surrounding him. So what was I going to do? And they had weapons, you know, and they had tattoos, and they were in the seventh and eighth grade.
Right. I remember my son being so surprised when I told him, when I had my first Stingray bike, and it was brand new, you know, got it and everything, and riding down the street in Philadelphia, and a gang of kids run up, stop the bike.
There's your bike.
Literally beat me up, punching me in the face, knock me off the bike, and just take it.
It's your bike. Their bike now.
Right. And he was just, that's what happened to me.
So this kid steals my milk, and literally 3 weeks later, he was shot dead at a bus stop. Which is proof.
Well, good news.
It's proof. First,
don't take Jim Hope's milk.
Don't take Jim Hope's
milk. That's for sure.
But it's true. I mean, and so that's where I grew up, and so everybody assumes. My wife, on the other hand, black woman. We don't really say African American so much because she's less African than I am in many respects. I mean, we're not African. Barack Obama's African American. He's from Africa. My wife is black. We go with the W.E.B. Du Bois thing, Souls of Black Folk. You know, I mean, it's like that. That black Americans are—they're not African. They're Americans. You know, and they're just
of course they are. But you know, for a person like me to say it, has to be a website in order to say what Tom is allowed to say this week. What or we will have his head on a pike.
You will be in
exactly, or just
you've stepped across the line.
Right,
said the wrong thing.
Right.
You know, it's like it's.
So you say more things than I do.
I can
because you show
say,
family picture and go look.
I'm clearly not a racist. I don't even believe in race. So there you go.
Yeah.
Ha ha.
Right.
But she was raised in the suburbs. Her father's a military guy. Her mother was a teacher and then became a principal. I mean, she So she's from. The funny thing is my wife's way more conservative than I am. But think about it. She married a white guy. I married a black woman. I would probably be more liberal. So it's kind of a, you know, but we were more – we've grown as we've gotten older. I don't consider myself more conservative, but I just consider myself, again, more of a centrist and recognizing that virtually everyone's wrong. You know, when you line up on a side or a team, you're probably wrong. That issues – if you make issues – complex issues simple, you're probably wrong. You know, nothing is simple. Not even the concept of nothing is simple. I mean, think about nothing. I mean, there's no way you can. There is no nothing. It's not black. Nothing doesn't have a color. It's not. It's not 3 degrees above absolute Kelvin as space is. You know, nothing doesn't have a temperature. So it's.
But I have. But I know. I've seen nothing because there have been periods in my career when I mean we're talking nothing. You know, and it. It has a color and a shape.
There is that,
of
that
like
sense,
mortgage
yes,
bills. It has
no, that's a
the
sucking
shape.
Hole. That's a black hole. That's something.
Yeah,
still.
That's you're going like
that's where
nothing.
Gravity is so heavy that it collapses everything within it. That is not nothing though. That's not the antithesis of is. There is no way to conceive for us to conceive of the antithesis of is. That's all I'm saying.
You know what? I was embarrassed speaking with you, and this is now years ago, but we were. You know, we were talking about you and Wanda and everything, and I said something, being little Tommy Sunshine. Saying, but isn't it great? You know, it's just great that it's 2013 now, and you know, and you live in a very, very cosmopolitan area like Los Angeles in the entertainment industry, and it's just terrific that you know that you could have this relationship and be unencumbered by the things that the people of the say the 60s or 70s were encumbered by, and you looked at me and just said like. You have no idea. I was like, what? What? You go, Tom, you are just clueless, man. No, and I said, really? People people just kill every day.
It's not the same. It's not what people – this is not – I mean, what happened to us is when Barack Obama got elected – we lived in Orange County. Principally, I stayed in Orange County. We met in Orange County. My wife's from San Diego. I'm from L.A. I went to UC Irvine. Was in Irvine. I was doing stand-up. I was going to move to L.A. I met my wife. Well, I'd known her before. We started dating. We got married in a very short order because we're good Christian people. So you have to hurry up before bad stuff happens. She was, you know, so we kind of were, you know, at the time that we got married, race relations were such that, black guys gave my wife grief. They saw her with a white guy,
Publicly, like in a restaurant.
They gave her looks. I never got the looks because anybody who was going to give me a look was, I'm 6'3". I was about 210, 215, benching well over 300 pounds. I was a big, strong kid. If you were going to give me a look, you'd have to be bigger than me. And anybody who's going to be bigger than me was probably an athlete. And he had a white girlfriend, so what was he going to say? You know, so –
You're out just picking fights with black guys.
I wasn't picking fights with anybody.
Yeah, come on. You kind of were.
I wasn't.
You kind of were. Hey, 6'3", excuse me.
I didn't have to worry about it. Nobody was going to give me any grief, you know, but they gave my wife grief. You know, they give her looks when I wasn't around or when I had one guy give a look and I kind of gave, he said something and he didn't want to say anything after that.
This is an offshoot. This is an offshoot of this conversation and we'll get back to it. Yeah. But I think, I don't know what I'm getting to with it, but a friend had said, we were at a restaurant, you know, having lunch or something, and some guy has a wisecrack, and I was like, you know, what's that about, man? And it didn't come to blows. We didn't even square off or whatever. Right. But I just kind of cast it off like a water off a duck's back. And he said, you know, I think that big guys like you, like, I don't think you realize how great it is that you're able to do that.
Yeah.
That you were able to just some comment of a guy, you could just kind of give him a look like, dude, this isn't happening, whatever, you know, good luck, get lost. Whereas, you know, when you're smaller, you just have to take that into account. The guy has a wisecrack and you just have to sit there and continue eating your turkey sandwich or you just whatever.
Yeah.
And I guess I just
– it's horrible.
Well, because I think your nature, mine, I think is, and many big guys, is to be a friendly person.
Yeah.
You're really not going around like I'm the ruler of this restaurant. No, nobody nothing. Come up to me and have a wife. No.
It's not my issue.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You're all friendly, and then some guy has a comment, and you just don't have to pay attention. You're like, what is that?
It's like, who are you?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Get lost.
I don't care about
you. Yeah, like a gnat. Or just wave it off. And
I don't know. I mean, it's not my bent anyway. And I'm not I don't hit people or anything like that. The only times I've ever been in a situation of confrontation is I'm protecting somebody. Somebody attacks
me. That's good use of being big.
Yeah, that's it.
That's a good use. Hey, stop doing that bad thing.
And when I was younger, I wasn't – I was a terrible football player in high school because I just wasn't strong enough yet. And then one day I turned around in college. It was weird. I was younger than everybody too. I was just young. And then I turned around and was like, I'm strong and I'm fast.
Right, right.
But I had the thing where I'd seen other people pick on people, and so I never wanted to be that person.
Yeah.
So I never was that person. I just don't, you know.
But your size helped you not have to deal with things with Wanda.
So I didn't have to deal with things with Wanda, but I didn't want her to deal with things. And so Orange County just was a place where nobody gave you any grief. Uh-huh. Nobody cared. Plenty of black guys were with white women, plenty of white women white guys with a black woman, enough to where it wasn't a big issue.
Right.
Nobody had a problem with
good.
It. But then when Obama got elected, suddenly my wife is getting horrible looks.
Oh, we got kind of newly polarizing.
And she didn't vote for him. So it's like, suddenly, because we live in nice neighborhoods in Irvine and stuff, and people are like giving her looks like, you're part of the problem. And it was like,
you mean white people in Orange County?
White people in Orange County.
Oh, like the very Republican thing. Yes, like, you got really your president. Thing.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. We got that. And because there are a lot of idiots in the world, you know, white and black. And that's the problem is that white people who are super liberal don't want to admit that there are a lot of black people who are idiots. There are, and there are a lot of white people who are idiots. See, color doesn't play into idiocy. Idiocy is something all its own, And it exists in a very happy little place in Little Idiotville, where most people live.
Idiotville?
Idiotville. Most people live there. There's so many idiots there. But yeah, I mean, it's just a real thing. So it's like – but there are plenty of idiots who gave my wife looks and me looks with her, you know, white people who are like, oh, you guys are the ones who love Obama. And then other people come up to my wife and go – white people go, oh, isn't it great that he's our president? And it was like, my wife's like, I didn't vote for him. I don't agree with him on many of these issues. My wife's father was a military guy, so she likes McCain. She likes military. Her perspective and mine also, in many respects, is if you're not going to serve your country, you shouldn't lead the country. I almost always think that a military guy should be a guy who. Our president, because he's already said, I'm willing to make the ultimate sacrifice for you as a nation. This is not about my ego. I've done this for you, you know. So I those are the guys that I respect the most because they did something. They put their lives on the line when there was nothing in it for them. There was no prestige to get out of it. There was no you weren't getting paid $500,000 a year. You weren't going to be feted everywhere you went. You put your life on the line when you were just an 18-year-old kid or a 22-year-old guy at a college who said, "I'm going to make this decision. And I'm going to make a difference."
What about Chuck Norris? He played Walker, Texas Ranger.
He did a very creditable job as. That's the other thing is, you know, and athletes. I mean, I watch football, but I hate it when they say we're going into battle. No, you're not. No, you might get hurt, but I mean, I'm not going to battle when I go drive a car. I could get hurt there too. You're going into battle when you're actually going to a place where people are shooting at you. You know, that's battle. That's a different thing. You know, so it's like we praise things that, I mean, and I think we all pretty much respect the military now, fortunately, but. You know, the things that we stand in praise of are also kind of silly. You know, it's like and the way that we frame our existences.
Well, that goes back to your skill set, your bent, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You get, you know, by being fast or by being
right.
particularly strong.
Right. Yeah,
you could, but everyone, not everyone, but most people just try to, in a way, monetize their skill set.
Right, absolutely.
You know, in high school or whatever, you figure, okay, what am I good at? What am I going to end up doing?
Yep. Well, people don't realize – I mean and I'm not putting down professional athletes because certainly not for their intellectual capacities because what people don't realize is that the ability to see the world the way an athlete does is an intellectual activity. I mean the thing that goes on in their brains to see the world slow down and to be able to make the moves that they do and to through muscle memory – and we call it muscle memory. It's in the brain. That's extraordinary. I mean, Michael Jordan's ability is not physical, it's mental. I mean, sure, his body can jump that high or could at the time, and it could make those things. But the brain is the thing that makes it. There's plenty of people with physical gifts who are not professional athletes. Plenty. Because they can't – they don't have the brain for it. And there is something – there's a martial ability in there. There's a certain way of framing the universe, and there's a way of overcoming adversity and other things that makes – professional athletes what they are. You know, that's
and again, I'm in the uncomfortable position of disagreeing with you vehemently.
100%.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, in order to track or whatever, in order to throw a ball to a running receiver, that's a lot of math going on. There's a lot of analysis going on in your mind.
Yeah, and to catch that ball and to be concentrated. You know, imagine catching a ball when a guy, 200 pounds, maybe less if it's a smaller cornerback, but now, I mean, Seattle Seahawks cornerback's 215 pounds, is going to hit you with every bit of concussive force that he can bring to that. And this guy isn't a guy – this isn't a high school guy hitting you as hard as he can. It's not a college guy. This is the best of the best at hitting people with pads on, with his helmet. He's going to hit you as hard as he can. And you've got to focus on that ball. You have to catch that ball knowing that this other thing's going to happen. And not only catch the ball, but you have to bring it into your body and you have to make a move. You have to kind of get – and you have to at the same time calculate his – angular momentum to some extent while calculating your own angular momentum, and it's not in numbers but in its own kind of physicality.
Believe me, this is
easy.
The only time on the Big Pop Fun podcast that either Jocks or Christopher Titus will be celebrated in any way.
There's plenty of jerks who are big, strong athletes, but there are also plenty of guys who are really great guys who are big, strong athletes. You know, but you just I mean, and yeah, I do have to agree. I mean, aggressiveness is a matter of opportunity a lot of the time. You know, you're bigger and stronger, and so you take advantage of that. And that does happen, unfortunately, a lot. You know, so yeah, I mean, that's bad. That's bad.
Yeah, I just I like to watch sports. Yeah. I like to watch sports. Yeah. Yeah. I just was one of those guys that got pushed around a lot by jocks, so I'm not really going enjoying the jock chess club or what, hang out, collecting football cards or whatever.
I'm probably Stockholm syndrome. I'm probably like
– I think
like,
you are.
You know, I'm just like, you know, they're great guys.
I think you are.
I probably am.
Jim Patty Hearst Hope. Yeah.
I try to see the other side, the humility that comes from wisdom, I guess, is my whole thing. It's like I'm trying to always see the other way that somebody's thinking. And my wife does that to me all the time because I'm one of those people. The truth is, and as you know, I'm one given to massive rants. I'm one given to hostility and anger.
What?
And, you know, I'm
shocked.
Like, not being.
Rants?
Yes, to rants. You know, it's like, I can't believe da 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 da. You know, but I'm really trying now to see the other side. And it's difficult. It's incredible but I think it's actually made me better at.
No, I think honestly, we're giving each other a hard time. I think it's tremendous. Is this something? Since when have you been doing this?
Yesterday at 7 o'clock in the evening.
You just said, "Hey, get off rant thing against people and start."
No, you know, my wife does it to me all the time. She says, "You know, I get into these." Oh, sorry, I popped it. My wife does it to me all the time. I will do something, and she'll say, "She points out the thing that contradicts everything that I've said." The example, you know, because I'll lump people into large categories because that's the way it's easier for me to do it. You know, that's the soul of prejudice and the soul of bigotry, the soul of racism is to say everyone of this thing is that, you know. And of course, yes, all Armenians stink. But other than that.
Thanks, Jim.
I'm kidding.
Man, oh man, am I going to have to edit this? I've said things that are going to get me in trouble.
No, I don't mean like stink as people. They just smell bad.
Oh, that. Yeah. Well, that's
Yes, and they're morally repugnant. But what I mean is, no, I'm kidding. I love Armenians.
Jim Hope does not represent the actual opinions of anyone on the Big Pop Fun podcast.
I picked Armenians
or Nerdist.
I met Ossetians, who are the the children of Sarmatians. But anyway,
what? Never mind.
Ossetia is a part of I think of Ukraine now, but a part of the old Soviet Union.
Good to know.
Anyway, and you know, it's a long story of this thing. But
please don't go there.
I'm not going to explain to you how Sarmatia was part
of
the Roman Empire.
I don't need to know.
Horsemen from the steppes.
Thank you.
You don't
know. People can look it up on their smartphones.
I'm not going to say anything about these people that eventually their language became Ossetic. But anyway, and they were actually a Persian group. But anyway, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to talk about that. At any rate, my wife is consistently making me be specific about what I'm criticizing so that I can't make blanket statements because the blanket statements are the death of intellect in many respects. They're the death of thought and they're the death of understanding because it makes it so that, you know, it's an easy way to stop thinking.
When you got out of sitcoms, mm-hmm. and it seemed that sitcoms, but sitcoms were almost not being made anymore.
Yeah.
And you got out of them.
That was not purposeful. That
right.
Was not
George Lopez is over.
George Lopez was over.
And as you saw the terrain, as sitcoms are just almost ceasing to exist.
Yeah. And as my agent said, George Lopez is not a good credit. That's what he told me.
And why is that?
Because it wasn't a credit that people were interested in at that time.
Jazzy?
They were looking for like Raymond credits or some other show. The show you're on matters to the next show. And they were saying, he said it's not a good credit. So I was like, oh no, that's not good. And maybe that was his way of not finding me more work because from then on in, I was kind of on my own.
But this was at the, you know, that many people know about, the game shows, one-hour game shows, one-hour reality shows. Yes. One-hour of a reality show is very inexpensive to make.
It is.
And that's two situation comedies of all the writers and all the actors.
So there were only a few sitcoms left. Right, there were only like five total on the air. And, it was a scary moment. And, that's when I went into animation and started working on a Nickelodeon show. Great show. Nickelodeon messed it up. And then
what show?
Planet Sheen.
Uh-huh.
And there was just, you know, it wasn't Nickelodeon per se, but it was people in there that were really kind of working behind the scenes.
Now, if I remember, we don't have to deeply get into it if you'd rather not, but you made a lot of episodes of that, didn't you?
We made 52.
Yeah, because I came 11. In and did, I mean,
did
I know.
26 full episodes, yeah.
26 full episodes yeah. of the thing. Yeah. And, I mean, will it ever see the light of day?
It's on Nicktoons. It's like,
I didn't even know.
I'd heard recently it's like the number two show on Nicktoons. It's like the number one comedy after Avatar. It does great, apparently, there. And whenever they aired it, it was great. But they had a problem with Steve Odekirk, who was it was Steve's show. And there was a problem. Nickelodeon had a problem with him. And they decided.
What do you mean, with him personally? Or
I don't really understand it. To this day, I don't understand it because the show was really funny. They always, the heads of it would come in and listen to the records. And they didn't do that for all the other shows. Our records were hilarious. The shows were hilarious. And there were, factions there with the Nickelodeon who wanted to kind of take over or had their own political power issues. I have no idea. Steve got blindsided by them, as far as I know, and they kind of just did their own stuff. And
so it was 26 and out.
26 and out, and then but a really good show and still airing originals. Mm-hmm. And then so that's still airing with my name on it, and now I'm on Dog with a Blog on Disney as a consulting producer, and that's just been a godsend. I didn't work. I did my own projects. I did a show for Henry Cho for Great American Country. And Henry Cho, it was a variety hour type thing. It was a fun show to do.
And that was back to square one, writing sketches or
doing stand up out on the road did my own pilot. The guys that helped me out were fantastic.
Shot your own pilot.
I shot my own pilot.
Did you pay for it?
I did. It didn't cost much because I got people.
Because that's what's happening now. Yeah. Even for a producer like yourself, you were co-executive producer of the George Lopez show and all this stuff.
And there are so few, Fox, and
right? So there are so few shows out there, so few opportunities that you and several of them. I mean, I think Carol Leifer did it, but you say I'm going to spend my money and I'm going to put the entire pilot together. I'm going to have the actors do it. I'm going to write it, and I'm going to then present it as sort of an almost finished pilot thing.
That's what I did.
Like, look at this.
Yep. And it turned out pretty well. It just didn't. It was good. I mean, it worked, but. Ultimately, it wasn't the thing that was going to get me the attention I needed. And at that point, my agency, to be unnamed, but they used to be Endeavor, they kind of just weren't talking to me anymore. They decided that we weren't.
You sort of went off on an iceberg somewhere, floating.
And it was sad because I liked them and had stayed with them. Other people had recruited me for other agencies, and I'd stuck with them. And then just to kind of not get any attention was disappointing. And it had kind of hurt my career for a couple of years. And then but then fortunately, Paul Kaplan, who I'd worked with at George Lopez, he'd run the show at the end with Mark Togo, his partner, and they're great guys, fantastic guys. Paul's brother, Michael, had a show on Disney, and I went in, and Paul suggested to Michael that I'd be a good person for the show, and I went in and helped out with the pilot.
Oh, well, that's good. He worked with you on George Lopez, his brother, who had a show coming up on Disney.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the show wasn't on the air. You said you worked on the pilot.
I worked on the pilot, and the pilot went really screamingly well. Michael's fantastic. I say nice things about people. Anytime I'll tell you, Michael is fantastic. Really, really super smart guy, really funny, and really just really nice guy.
I hear very good things about him, though we haven't met, nor has he had me on his show.
We tried to
in which case
show, but you're offer only.
I'm so beginning to dislike
Disney
him.
Disney doesn't do offer only. So, you know, offer only people like yourself, hard to get on the show. Because,
I didn't even know it came in. I didn't know I was that important.
It says offer only, and they go, well, Disney doesn't really do offer only. So we as soon as you're not offer only, or if you want to just come in and do a favor, perhaps Michael would. But at any rate,
Dog with a Blog, it's
and now
easy.
I have a new agent over at APA, and Lindsay Howard, wonderful, like her very much, so very happy. But it took me a couple of years, and Dog with a Blog is fantastic.
Easy to lampoon a talking dog show. However, when you go into the meeting, and he's saying this is a dog that has a blog on the computer, and the dog talks in live action on the show.
Yes. The dog is – the fun thing about the show is that the show is written – Michael's thing was let's do a family show. And actually Disney wanted to do a family show. It wasn't necessarily a kid's show. It's a family show. Hopefully parents can watch it with their kids. And we've been getting good feedback on that. The parents are actually enjoying the show as much as the kids, and the kids are loving it. So that's a great thing. And the
show's
the
going well.
Show's doing really well. And the dog is the dog's sarcastic. The dog's an adult. It's a man. Stephen Fulda's the voice. He's hilarious.
The dog does not actually talk?
The dog does talk, yes. But Stephen gives it voice lessons.
Ah.
He gives it line readings.
Mm-hmm.
And it does an impression of Stephen.
Is this do you just tape this whole show? Or is this live audience?
We tape it. Uh-huh.
With the dog, and yeah, the dog has to stand still and stuff.
And our kid actors are fantastic. Francesca and G. G is kind of our lead. She plays Avery. She's fantastic. Francesca's young, and Blake, fantastic. They're great. They're great kids. And our two adults are wonderful. Regan and Beth.
Regan yes.
Burns. You know Regan Burns, probably.
I've met Regan at auditions. I mean, Regan spent a lot of time, spent 10 years as that guy in every TV commercial.
He's still.
You just are amazed.
Yeah, he's a machine.
I mean, I have never, I had my friend Jeff Harlan on the podcast previously, and Jeff was one of those guys for a period. The guy that just, what happens?
How do you get these commercials? They
wave a magic wand over your head, and suddenly you just get everything.
Yeah.
And Regan was one of those guys.
He's fantastic. He books because he knows what he's doing. I mean, and he's great in the show, and Beth Littleford is hilarious, and so, you know, she's great, and so we got adults who are doing fun stuff, and the kids are really talented, and our dog is great, and so I the truth is, I mean, I my wife Wanda, she's laughing at the joke. She laughs at the show. She watches the show. I love the dog. And it's like, I love that dog.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she, and, you know, so we're
getting. Are the hours better because it's kid actors?
The hours are, well, it's not so much as that. The hours are better because Michael is so efficient.
Uh-huh.
You know, he really is a hardworking guy who really kind of keeps things in an even keel and really knows what he's doing and doesn't. There's really not a lot of, there's no wasted time. You know, it's just kind of we get the work done, and he also knows what he likes, and knowing what you like and knowing what you want really helps. You know, I mean, knowing what the characters' voices are, knowing what you know, he's very clear as to what he wants that to sound like, and he's if you're ever going to run a show, clearly enunciate your goals. You know, make it very clear what every actor is doing, every character is doing. And your staff will do a great job for you. You know, they'll go right into those.
You mean generally over the whole show?
Just know what you want. Uh-huh. You know, and if you know what you want, he knows what he wants. I was very fortunate. I kind of ran the room for Planet Sheen while I did, and I kind of knew what I wanted. And I think the show turned out really well early on. I think Nickelodeon kind of did it. Some people at Nickelodeon. I shouldn't say Nickelodeon in general, because Nickelodeon was very nice to me and I liked them very much. Some of the people that kind of underneath, and now I think they've all been fired.
That aren't there anymore. They're out of show business.
They're out of, so you're allowed
to hate them.
I can not hate them, but say you kind of did a bad thing. You kind of messed up a really, really fun show. Maybe for ego, or maybe because you thought it was the best thing, but it wasn't. But anyway, yeah. So anyway, that's that. I don't want to bore anybody, but you know, vision and voice, that's acting, that's writing. Vision and voice, you know, if you know you have a vision for where you want to go and know the voice, you know, and you're good.
Have a vision for where you want to go, you mean,
with
in the story?
The show is.
With what the show is.
Uh-huh. Have a vision for the whole thing.
Because I ask people, and you have shown me in your career your great, great flexibility as a writer.
Yeah.
To get into various situations with various people and be able to make it happen as a writer of many different things, sketches, situation comedies, animation,
all
kinds of things. You really have done it all.
Yeah.
So when the writer comes to you, when the young writer, you know, laptop in hand at the Starbucks says, what do you do? What should I do? What do you tell them?
Pray.
Okay, Jim Hope, thanks so much.
No,
I was wondering how pregnant I could make that pause.
I was going to let you go as long as you wanted. You know me.
I felt that if I went any longer, that people thought there was something wrong in the recording, and then they would turn it off. Or I probably would have gone 8 more seconds.
No, I think what I would say to a new person coming in is just keep writing and write and read and write and watch and write and learn and write and always write. And just be aware that it's not always going to be what you want, but that you're always working toward the thing that you want, and that every circumstance has its advantages, and find the advantages. Try to make everything that you're involved in better, you know, add value. It hasn't always worked for me. I mean, you know, being a stand-up, when I walked into Titus the room, I already had a persona. I knew what I was when I was pitched a joke. A lot of guys don't get that. It's hard if you're just a writer, because you have to kind of figure out how to pitch a joke, and you just watch other people, and don't skip steps. You know, a lot of people want to be writers right away. Well, you're not. You're not ready. You can't run a show. You don't have a vision for it. They'll have to bring in an adult to run the show because you don't know what you're doing. Stick around. Watch. Watch other people do it. Learn from everybody around you, because people don't do that. So many people, and I hate to be one of those people, these kids today. We do have an entitled generation coming up who assume that they shouldn't be production assistants for more than 2 years, that they should already be staff writers. And they're not ready. They don't know what that is. Be a writer's assistant first. Before you're a staff writer, be a writer's assistant, because you sit in a room and you listen to other people pitch jokes or pitch ideas, story notions, and you kind of get an idea of how to do that, that everybody has a different style. Develop your style there. Take some time. Learn what you're doing while you're always writing, always writing, always writing. And don't ever look at anything that is beneath you. I mean, that's not immoral. Don't say, well, I'll never want to write jokes for somebody. Go write jokes for them. I mean, what does it hurt you to go write a bunch of jokes for some stand-up comic, even if they're not going to pay you? It doesn't hurt you at all. You just learned how to write jokes, you know? I mean, I wrote for people for free for a long time, and or just got a little thing here, a little thing there, because it was like, hey, I just got to learn how to do this, you know? And just do everything you can possibly do. And don't be discouraged. Well, that's a hard thing to say, actually, right? When you tell people not to be discouraged, because some people aren't talented and they need to be discouraged. I don't know how to answer that. You know, I don't know how to know if you're talented or not. I guess if everything closes in on you and you watch other people who just are clearly better than you doing it, then maybe you should say.
You mean in that specific writing style?
Right.
Maybe you're not a comedy writer. Yeah, maybe you're a poet. Who knows? Exactly. Maybe you're.
Yeah, it's tough, because it's like people don't want to admit that. Here's the dilemma. There is that the smartest, most sensitive intellects are the ones that are most likely to say, maybe I'm not good at this.
Well, that's truer than
isn't. People,
I mean, it's true of everything. It's right. True of everything.
Yeah, the
I mean, the great
depth.
Singer wants to do 25 takes because it wasn't.
Because what it wasn't
the, and then they
exactly
and then they go home a little bit unhappy.
Yes,
and
yes.
The kid goes on American Idol and just goes, "What do you mean I can't sing?
You mean I'm not good?
Don't exactly. You remember you told me you loved me, baby?
Yes,
you know,
yes,
and it's just
yes.
Like it's just this weird
no
disconnection.
Yes, but the talented person, the person really understands it. He's going, no, I was flat on that note.
Exactly.
I sang for half an hour and I was flat on that one note.
Mm-hmm.
Or the really talented comic, a lot of the time, he's looking out at all the people laughing and seeing the one guy not. And he's going, how do I make that person laugh? You know, and it's like.
Yeah. And then so many come off after their 5-minute open mic thing and say, yeah. I destroyed. And it was silence.
It was silence peppered
by conversations among the tables. And you're thinking, I think that it's a delusional
how
person.
Could you not have seen? And now, I knew a guy who came off. He'd done 15 minutes in front of a hot crowd on a Saturday night and got a titter on his very best joke. And I was trying to be nice as he came off. And I said, I remember saying, wow, they're a little rough, huh? And he goes, yeah, at first, but you know, I really got him going. And I was like, no, you didn't. Not a bit.
Yeah.
They did nothing. You know, but that was just, and it took a long time. It takes a long time for people, those, you know, they just don't get it. But and the people who really do get it are prone to quit, you know, because they're like, well, you know, maybe I'm just not good enough.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Well, Jim Hope. Much like Will Rogers.
Yes.
Jim Hope never met a man didn't like.
Lots of women.
But Jim clearly has never met Gallagher.
Do not.
But
Or Gary Busey, from what you said.
Well, yeah. No, it's okay. We just we put a little spice in the podcast okay. just to, you know, as yes. As Johnny Carson would say, a hint of mint.
A little hint of mint.
But thanks so much for being on. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Did I talk too much?
Huh?
Did I talk too much? Are you sending me home?
You want to talk more?
No.
Do you have anything else to say?
Good.
Do you have anything? What piece of wisdom do you want to leave us with? I mean, if you're a writer, if you're a young writer, keep writing. Write. Yes.
That's all I said.
As Michelangelo, in his last writing to his assistant Antonio,
yes.
He wrote, before his death, yes. He wrote a little note to him saying, draw, Antonio, draw, and do not waste time.
He said, and do not waste time.
Really? And I really took that. I wrote that in my notebook once. Just draw, Antonio. Draw, and do not waste time.
Wow.
And that's just it. I mean, that's just it. Just do it.
Yeah. No, it is.
Just do it and do not waste time.
Yeah. Just, and don't, yeah, exactly. And don't be lazy. And if you are lazy, quit. Because, quit being lazy. Quit being lazy or quit doing this. One of the two. You know, and don't blame other people. When you fail, don't blame anybody. It's a system. Oh, that's another thing. I will say this.
Uh-oh. I was about to sign off.
I know you're about to sign off, but this is one
thing
I will say. This
is podcast ending war.
This is absolutely true.
Fake podcast endings.
Don't be upset if the industry doesn't love you. It's an unfair industry. That's just what it is. You signed up for this. If you've been in this business for a period of time and then suddenly it turns its back on you, it's not the business's fault. It always was going to do that. The business is a prostitute. The business is not in love with you. The business doesn't care about you. The business is the girlfriend who picked you because you wore a Letterman's jacket, but as soon as you were not on the football team anymore, she didn't need you anymore. Go into it understanding that. It is not for you. It is not built for you. It's not about you. It's not going to help you. It doesn't care about you. It is not for that. It's if you want to be an artist, be an artist. This is a business. Understand that. But your art is not necessarily something we care about.
Yeah, I've said it on the podcast before, but can I do
yes.
my
yes.
thing as yes. people ask me and they say, well, this, I've been here 8 months and whatever, and there, this happened. That guy took my idea. I said, you have climbed aboard a pirate ship. All right. You knew it was a pirate ship. You saw the Jolly Roger and you didn't want to work on the regular ship. No. And just make your money and deliver your molasses. You wanted to look at those guys with the scarves around their necks and the swords. I want to be on that. You've climbed aboard.
Yep.
Don't nap on a hammock and then come to me and say some guy, stole your little treasure of gold that you put under your hammock.
Uh-huh.
The
yeah.
first night you're going to get stabbed in the back. Everyone's going to take everything you have. You'd better just learn how to yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum. Let's go. You chose this.
You got on board the pirate ship. That's exactly right. It's like if you want to do art, if you want to do art and make a good living, William Carlos Williams was a doctor. Brilliant guy. He became a doctor. He worked as a doctor. He made a nice living as a doctor, and he wrote his poems. Thank you. That's exactly what you do. If you want to make a great living as an artist, get a nice job that pays and then do your art on the side.
Like me with my macrame.
Excellent. You know what? It is fantastic. If you have not seen him at the Third Street Promenade.
I make really beautiful candle holders.
You really need to get down and see the Tom Wilson.
You hang those candle holders, macrame candle holders from the ceiling, put on a couple of Grateful Dead albums.
Fantastic.
That is an afternoon of time-wasting fun.
Yeah. Okay.
But this has been an afternoon of time well spent. So I thank you. Thank you, Jim. Okay, so it ended okay. I didn't fly off the handle. I didn't get angry. And I didn't just go off on the podcast as a complaint fest about, stuff that's happened. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jim. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Not that you're tuning in because radios almost don't exist anymore. But thank you for downloading the podcast. Thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to Chris, Katie. Thank you for everybody at Nerdist Industries. Thank you to McPherson Guitars for the fabulous guitar that I play. Thank you for you especially. Hey, consider subscribing or telling a friend. Keep in touch, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye. Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.